men, start your engine.
Listening to 91.5 FM WPRK Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College, and the best in basement radio. Right now, you are tuned into the Motorsports Hour, talking about all sorts of racing. It happens here on WPRK every Sunday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Let me give you the website to log on to if you would like to take part in the show. It is, as always, WPRK.org. That's WPRK.org. Check us out online, see what we're playing, all kinds of good stuff there. Chat with us, link to our Spinitron site. You can take us with you wherever you are in the world via the TuneIn app. Good stuff there. And check us out on our website, themotorsportshour.com, where you can find our podcast and all kinds of fun stuff there. My name is Clark. Alongside me tonight, as always, Mr. Chris Wire to Wire. Wire, how you doing over there, man?
Real good, man.
Good.
Real good.
Good. You know, your nice little weekend, you know, spring break, right?
Yeah.
How was your spring break?
Where'd I thought you go? We settled
Daytona?
Down. I went down my driveway.
Okay.
To work.
Okay.
And back home again.
That's what I did, too.
Oh, funny.
Sucks not getting spring break anymore, man.
Yeah. I did not go to Mexico.
No Mexico. I did not go to, Key West. I did not go to Daytona Beach. Did not go to any of those places. I stayed right here and I went to work.
Did somebody do that and then come home and make you aware all the time?
No. Why did you have that? Nobody would do that in your household, would they?
You would think not.
No, they wouldn't do that.
But yes, indeed, man. They did.
Mexico. So Mexico.
Mexico, yes.
All right. Hey, you know what, Wire? You know what I did all week? I watched basketball. And then we're not going to talk about what happened today. But some great basketball. Did you watch that Gator game that finished at 1 in the morning the other night?
I did not.
Oh, man. You missed out.
You didn't expect me to, though, did you?
No, I didn't. But okay. That was good stuff. That was really good stuff.
Is that the buzzer beater?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Buzzer beater to end all buzzer beaters. Unfortunately, it did not work out too well today for the Gators.
I can watch that on the internet the next day, so I don't have to.
Well, I did. I was up till 1 o'clock. I was up till 1 o'clock in the morning watching that. It was fun stuff, man. Fun stuff. But yeah, Final Four said Syracuse not in it.
Syracuse, no,
not in it.
NIT, the not invited tournament.
Yeah,
they're not in that either.
No. Yeah, they're
bounced.
Not in that either. Yep. Oh well. Gators now out. But hey. Oh well. Good season, I guess.
Yeah. Depending on what your goals were at the outset.
Yeah. Not bad. But hey. We have racing this weekend. We are back. Formula One is back. So we have got a ton of stuff to cover, don't we?
I agree, yes.
Yeah.
And if you can't hear the enthusiasm in our voice,
yeah,
that's actually enthusiasm in our voice.
I tell you what, I have been looking forward to this weekend for a long time. And it was good stuff, man. Formula One back in Melbourne, where we always kick off. We kick off in Melbourne, and it's a great place to start the Formula One season. We have everything new, it seems like, this year. And I tell you what, we were not disappointed with a very exciting weekend.
I wasn't.
You were?
I was not.
Oh, okay. No, yeah. No, I was not disappointed at all. Not one bit throughout this weekend. Just some really, really cool stuff going on in Formula One. First off, Wire, let's talk about these new cars. They're awesome. I love them.
You know, the thing that I... Technology is what it is, and, you know, we're not going back to V12s, V10s, you know, big V8s screaming engines anymore.
No, that's not happening.
It is what it is. No amount of arguing on our part is going to get us there. However, they now look like proper Formula One cars.
They really do.
All of the camera angles, you know, the lower, the wider, they just do. They just look the part now.
Yeah. They do. They just look cooler. They look cooler. They look faster, just standing still. There was a great comparison that they did in Free Practice 2. They actually aired Free Practice 1, which you don't normally see. But there was a great comparison that they did in Free Practice 2. So if you got it on the DVR, if you hadn't had a chance to watch it yet, go back and we'll look at it, because they did a great comparison on NBC Sports between 2016 cars and the 2017 cars, showing them side by side and, you know, kind of photoshopping them together kind of thing. So half the pictures, the right side of a 2017 car and the left side of a 2016 car kind of thing. And it's really, really telling all the changes that went in there. And they look so much better. They're lower, they're wider, they're just cooler. They just look like they're more business. They've got everybody's running that kind of delta-shaped front wing, that kind of swept back front wing design. You know, you think of the wings on a Cessna, right? On your little Cessna 172 or something. It's just that kind of...
Well, not my Cessna.
No, not your Cessna, but a Cessna. Let's say that.
Yours?
No, unfortunately, Cessna-less.
Oh.
Okay. But it's just that kind of straight across wing, you know, just kind of straight across... Piper Cherokee, they call it a tertiary bar wing, in case you're wondering. But anyway, but it's just this kind of straight across wing. And then you look at the wing on like a 737 or something that you're flying on you know, Delta or whatever it is. And it's that wing that's swept way back.
Angled backwards.
Yeah, it's angled backwards. It's that swept back wing. Well, now all the front wings in Formula One, gone is the Cessna wing and in is the swept back 737 wing.
Yeah.
They look cool.
Newer, better.
Yeah. And they've got that Delta shaped. How many elements do you think are on the Mercedes front wing? Remember when we used to have, you know, go way back where we had these single element front wings, and then they had, you know, some double element stuff, and they did a couple little tricks here and there to kind of turn the air and move some stuff here and there. And they put the little dive planes on the outside, put another little trick here, a twist there, a little flap here or there. How many elements? Wing, you know, element, instead of having a one or two or even four element wing.
I'm going to go with 22.
22 elements.
Yes. Six blades per side.
Right.
Two dive planes on each end.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of those little, you know, things that go on top in front of the wheels.
So you think 22 is the number?
I think 22.
Okay. Try 48. That's how many different elements are on the Mercedes front wing.
It's pretty spectacular stuff.
That's how
it's
much
of,
is going
it's
on.
It's out of my pay grade.
Yeah. hold on. I need about 5 or 6 minutes to count this, and then I'm going to have to count it again. 48 different elements. That's all the technology that's going into this. That's incredible. It's incredible.
And it's always been that way. It's just been rules limited. So they always built the cars to the max that the rules allowed. And so this isn't some new idea that Mercedes came up with. Just they weren't allowed to build them this way before.
Well, they weren't allowed to build them, but maybe we've had advances in materials technology, advances in engineering with all kinds of different stuff.
Well, and design philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, different needs. You know, this car being shaped much differently than last year's car requires different, you know, aerodynamics on the nose.
The radiator inlets on the Ferrari, I think, are just the coolest thing.
They are really, really spectacular.
So you think of the radiator inlets, everybody puts them kind of behind the front wheels, you know, and they get air. You've got the suspension kind of hanging out there in the open, and they get the air that kind of comes through the suspension. Well, Ferrari said, no, we don't want that air. We want the air that's nice and clean. So we're going to go up over top of the suspension and suck air in from there.
But think of how far we've come from, you know, the Ferrari jet fighter. You remember the jet fighter side inlets? They were,
yeah,
you know, the big and rectangular and
yep,
kind of ungainly looking.
Yeah.
These are not them.
No, these are not them. They look like they are just, you know, sculpted by an Italian sculptor, because they are. I mean, it's just really cool. The rear wings are so much lower. They look awesome. Tires being, you know, fat tires.
That's the biggest. I mean, aside from the design of the rear wing now, which we talked about last week, having more of the, you know, A1 GP kind of thing, which, you know, many of our listeners may not even recognize. It was just a very short-lived European Formula Series. But it harkens back to that.
Yeah, those are some pretty good-looking cars.
They do, and they look good.
Yeah. Well, I'm
tires are the biggest thing, though.
I tell you what, I love the way the cars look, but here is what I really, really loved. How fast they corner now.
Well, noticeably.
We talked about this in years past when we kind of, when we left the V8 era and we moved into this power unit era, the turbo V6 with, you know, everything else. Speeds went up because there was a lot more power available from these turbocharged and hybrid power units. So speeds, lap times dropped, and top speeds went up significantly. But one of the issues was it seemed like they were just going slower in the corners almost.
Well, and I think the heightened speeds, you know, relative to their corner speeds made it look exactly like that.
You know, it looked like a motorcycle race at some points where they kind of park it on the straightaway, park it coming into the corner, get through the corner, and then, you know, stomp on the gas, and they were looked like they were shot out of a rocket. Now, that's a huge, huge overstatement there. I mean, they never really parked it, but they just corner so much faster now. So
much
faster.
You want to know where I noticed it first? Where did you notice it first?
I think I noticed it the S-turn at Melbourne, at Albert Park. I don't know the turn number. I'll look it up here in just a second, but the way they change direction. Formula One cars have always changed direction incredibly fast. This is a whole new incredibly fast, though.
Yeah, I first noticed it coming onto the front straightaway. Because it used to be that little short shoe. There's a left-hand, 90-degree left-hander, and then it's a 90-degree, but it's a curved right-hander. And the curved right-hander, they'd always have to breathe the throttle until they were about mid-corner and then pick it back up, you know, on the exit. They barely lift going into it now. They hit the 90-degree left-hander, and then they're on the gas, and if they're not flat through that corner, they're close to it at a much higher pace. They don't even breathe the throttle anymore.
Yeah.
They're
on it.
You're accelerating all the way through that corner in it, and it shows because I think the average speed for the pole time, and I'm not going to give away one to pole, but the average speed for that pole time was on a street circuit now, you know, a pseudo street circuit, 144 miles an hour average speed.
Yeah, this is a temporary street circuit kind of, you know, a park circuit. But yeah, I mean, that's incredible.
It is incredible.
It's incredible. Turn 11, 12, the complex that I'm talking about.
Yeah. Blaze that.
You see them go through there and say, whoa, that's fast.
Yeah.
It was really cool to see how just hard these cars corner. And it's one of those things where turn in now is more, is sharper, I think, too. You can just yank the wheel over and it grips, man. It just grips.
You know, the thing that I like about the thing that I'm most pleased with right now is the guys all love it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so excited to be driving cars that are this fast and this technical. And here's the other thing that a couple of weeks ago I saw a headline from Fernando Alonso that said Alonso thinks that these cars aren't going to be, you know, more driver oriented than previous versions. I would ask Fernando at this point if he's willing to recant that.
Yeah.
Because I think if anything was shown this weekend, that you got to hustle these cars and you got to be at the top of your game.
Yeah, it seems less like of a management role that the drivers are playing this year. Absolutely. They're doing a lot less managing, and they are kind of, this is kind of getting back to the old school. Go out there, grab that car by the scruff of the neck, and just beat it until you get to the front, until you cross the checkered flag, you know? And just, you know, beat the snot out of it. And that's what we had.
And if I got any pushback on that, I would say ask Pascal Wehrlein.
Yeah. Ask him. Well, let's get into that. Before we get to that, let's talk about some news going into this weekend. Some trick suspension that Red Bull had on the car. They took it off, went back to kind of reverted back to an old suspension. Mercedes did something similar as well.
And that's funny, too, because they were a week ago saying, no, it's good. It's got the approval.
Yeah. No, we're absolutely fine. Yeah, no, we took it off anyway. I thought you said you were fine. Guess not. So some issues there, but you know, nothing too huge. Here's a lot of the talk going on. This may come as a surprise to you, Wire, but Mercedes might be interested in the services of Sebastian Vettel.
Oh, shocker!
Yeah,
I love all these things because the headline is always doesn't rule it out.
Yeah.
And is Bottas a one-year deal?
Yes, it is. Okay. One-year deal for Bottas.
And that may have been by design, simply because Vettel's contract, you know, is up at the end of the year.
Absolutely. Here's another big issue, and this is one of those things from Liberty Media coming into their control of the sport. Where we've been to one F1 race at Circuit of the Americas.
Fabulous.
Incredible. Really well laid out circuit, a great event. And one of the things, obviously, went there on media passes. And when you have a media pass, obviously, you're a member of the media. So you're in the paddock. You're in the paddock with the
access.
Drivers. You have access to all that. And you're in there with all that stuff. So you're, you know, around the team areas and all that kind of thing. Which is a great way of seeing a race. It's so much fun to be there. Just like you have at IMSA and like you have with NASCAR to a certain extent. You know, when you go to the Rolex 24, you can walk around the haulers, all that kind of stuff, talk with drivers, talk with engineers. The pits and garages are largely open. They're not quite as open in Formula One as they are in, sports car racing. But, excuse me. Around the world, they're typically sealed off, you know, hermetically sealed to the point that nobody can get in.
Yeah. Well, we did, even though we were in the members of the media, when we were in Texas, the only glimpse you got of a driver was when they went from the hospitality tent. They walked across the aisle behind the pits, and they went into the garage.
Yeah.
And you couldn't talk to them in the hospitality tent unless it was an arranged event. And you had no access to the pit garage.
So right.
When they were doing that, you didn't have access.
No.
And it wasn't the same thing. You could see them, but that was about it.
But it's still cool, nonetheless, to be into the paddock area and be around all of that.
Sure.
It's a great way to experience a race. Just like when you go to the Rolex, when you go to Sebring, any of those sports car races, you can get close to the action, get close to the teams. How many times have we sat there and watched somebody repairing a car at, 11:30 at night? And then talk with one of the engineers when they're done, kind of thing. That's not something that we do on a media bench. That's something that anybody can do.
Sure.
You know, you have to pay your whatever it is, $5-$10 or whatever it is to get into the paddocked area. But as far as I'm concerned, well worth it. Well, Liberty Media is going to start offering for sale paddock passes to the general public. And I think this is a great start.
Oh, I think it's terrific. I wonder about Coda, because the confines of that, area behind pit lane is pretty small.
Yes, it is. Now, it's not massive, but, you can make some changes, put some gates around, do that kind of thing. And I just think it's fantastic. We're having a ton of pushback, however, from guess who?
Well, Bernie?
The old guard is sitting in, talking, showing up and saying, well, that's a terrible idea. It's an elite sport, Formula One, and we don't need to be letting the riffraff and the general public in to this. Those paddock passes, those should only be for, our teams and, some members of the media.
And hoity-toity sponsors.
And hoity-toity sponsors, exactly. And that's one of the reasons why we have all these sponsors, so that they can get these paddock passes.
No, it isn't.
You're absolutely right. That is not the case. Maybe at Monaco, all right? Maybe at Monaco, but that's it. That is not the reason. The only reason why, Shandon is the, champagne, or they don't even make champagne, sparkling wine or whatever it is, sponsor, and the reason why they spray Shandon champagne at the end of every Grand Prix, is not so that Shandon can get more paddock passes so they can send their special guests into Formula One races and, see behind the stage, so that they'll sell more bottles of champagne.
Sure, it's exposure and it's association with, the quote-unquote elite sport.
Yeah, well, this is exactly the direction that Formula One, in my mind, needs to move in, being more open, more accessible to the fan base. There's no reason to keep all these drivers and everybody sealed off and treat them like they're, they don't even treat them like they're, movie stars or something. They're behind a firewall, basically, that nobody can get close to him. We can't.
See the video of the fan with Fernando Alonso?
No, I did not.
There was apparently a signing, and I didn't see multiple drivers there, but he was there, so it may have been arranged by McLaren. And apparently she's like Alonso's super fan.
Oh, yeah?
From somewhere. I don't know if she's from Australia or not. And she lost her mind.
Oh, yeah?
When it was her turn.
Well, good for her.
And he came from around the... I mean, he signed her gear. He came from around the table, gave her a big hug, and then he walked out to the edge of the stage with her where the lines were forming and held up her hand and, like in a victory kind of salute and waved to everybody. And that's how you should treat the fans.
It's absolutely how you should treat the fans.
Not, cowering away in your hall or something like that because, you can't be seen with, the schlubs. You can't. I mean, it was perfect.
It's great.
That's exactly how you should do it.
Yeah. So more access for fans. I love the idea that, they're going to start selling them. That's a start.
Sure. But, and if you want to make it elite, then price them accordingly.
Yeah. And I'm sure they will. I'm sure it's not going to be
But you're still,
cheap.
Because here's the thing. There are plenty of people that go to a Formula One race for business.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you are not from Shandon or, any of the Formula One sponsors or any of the associated sponsors from, COTA or any of the promoters, you still would then have access to the paddock area where you may be able to further your business interests. So why not? I mean, it's another avenue of revenue. And, those people are going to bring some family or they're going to bring their kids or something like that. And it may have a business purpose. It may be strictly for enjoyment. But either way, it doesn't do any harm.
No, it does none.
So I don't see a downside.
Neither do I. I think I see only potential upside here. And I would love to get to a point where we're having tracks 10 years from now, 15 years from now, completely redesigned to look like Daytona on the, not on the infield totally, but when you walk through the garages and everything at Daytona, I mean, they have completely redone that whole space so that fans can be part of that process.
They call it the fan zone.
Yeah. And I would love to see that happen in Formula One tracks so we don't have these areas where the cars go and you can't see them. But we have, at Daytona, they have all these windows looking into the garages. So you can, watch the garages. You can walk around while you look from the front. And I would love to see something like that 10, 15 years down the road. And I think this is a great way to start.
And you want to, I don't know the origins of this, but I would hearken a guess that the COTA race from a year and a half ago put a spark in somebody's eye.
Right.
When Saturday qualifying was essentially rained out and several hours into it, when they were pretty sure the weather was not going to clear and they were not going to do it, they said, everybody who's there, come on down to pit lane. And they opened up pit lane and made the drivers accessible. And it was a huge hit.
Yeah. There's no reason.
I mean, tons of good press and nothing but smiles up and down, you know, pit lane. It was a great, you know, it appeared that the drivers and everybody had just as much fun as the fans.
There is no reason we can't do something like that every race. You do not have to have a torrential downpour for that. But
sure, but I think that that's a starting point for, you know, this idea that, you know, access needs to be improved.
Yeah. Access needs to be improved. You know, one of the things that we have at all the sports car races we go to, they have it, if you look in the calendar, not, you know, the published calendar, but the more official calendar from the sanctioning body, which you look at that and it says mandatory driver signing. And it says drivers must be present at their designated area to sign autographs for the fans for these times. And, you know, they say it's an hour, or maybe it's 20 minutes or whatever that time is. That is part of it. And they all have their hero cards. They sign them. They give them to the kids. They move on. There is absolutely no reason why you can't do something like that in Formula One. There's no reason why you can't.
I remember in 2012 when we were out there, they had a signing. Mm. Remember out by the stadium, which on the outer edge of the track, there was that pavilion there.
A much more limited.
Very limited.
Yeah, a much more limited.
But you remember the lines that we saw. Yeah. I mean, the fans are hungry for this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the lines for that, and I don't remember who was, you know, who it was. It was not Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel.
Right.
I mean, it was mid-packers, you know,
yeah.
Sergio Perez and you know, guys like that. So the fans were hungry for that stuff, and they will absolutely pay for the access as well as support, you know, the sport if they move in that direction.
All right. Well, let's move on from that. But I think that's a great direction that Formula One is heading in. And that is owed to Liberty Media, because you can guarantee you that would never happen under Bernie.
I think the comments in the story tell you that.
Yeah. Never happen under Bernie. Great. Great to see this. Okay, let's move on from that. Let's get to the race. Let's talk a little bit about practice. We had practice. We had everybody out there. We had, you know, our Mercedes guy was out there who was driving a Ferrari now, Pascal Wehrlein. And then after practice, he decided, no, not gonna race this weekend. Remember, he had this accident at the Race of Champions, injured his back. What his statement was, that he said, you know, I made this decision with the team, not under the advice of doctors, and I decided that I was not going to race because I don't think my fitness level was up to withstanding an entire race distance.
No issues with his back injury.
Right.
We were assured.
This is his claim. I'm going to say this right now, Wire. I don't buy that. I just don't buy it.
Okay. What do you got?
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, you're just a
I just don't
cynical.
I'm just cynical. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Is it cynic or is it skeptical?
Skeptic.
Okay.
Skeptic. I just don't buy that. And that he said, hey, because of my injury, I practiced, I was fine, but because of my injury, I wasn't able to train like I've wanted to be able to train. Therefore, I'm out of shape. And can't make an entire race distance, so I'm going to turn it over to the test and reserve driver.
Well, here's what I would say about that. With such limited testing, it would be hard to know just from, you know, what they did at Barcelona that you could physically make a race distance. Now, he may have tested at Barcelona and said, it's going to be a stretch, but I've got, you know, 3 weeks to be able to up my fitness level, and he could have gotten here and decided that, no, it wasn't going to happen. It could also be that, you know, like when Fernando crashed at Barcelona, you know, and we got all these stories about how he was completely uninjured and, you know, there were no issues with his health, and then he didn't show up or, you know, he couldn't race the first weekend in Melbourne. Then all of a sudden we found out, yeah, there were some issues with his health.
Yeah.
So it could be one of those situations. I don't know what the team say, you know, if they save face or anything by doing this. I don't know that really the sporting world cares much.
No, I don't know either, but I do find it odd because he practiced and then they said, I'm not going to race. So we're going to have Antonio Giovinazzi race.
I checked that with Junkins before I came over here.
Nice. Nicely done. Antonio Giovinazzi, first Italian in Formula One since Vittorio Antonio Luizzi and Yarno Trulli before him. So we've been without an Italian in Formula One for a while. Obviously excited. Who thought, did anybody think he was going to be in the race car this Sunday? I mean, he was a GP2 guy.
He was a runner-up at GP2. Yeah. So,
good driver.
There's some skills there. He is a Ferrari development driver. So, yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, really an unknown quantity because GP2 cars and these current level Formula One cars, not even close.
No, they are nothing similar anymore.
So,
remember a couple of years ago when GP2 cars were actually almost faster, where we were setting similar lap times to Formula One cars?
Yeah.
Look how far we've come.
Yeah, cool. The difference now is enormous.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about qualifying real quick. We had a threat of rain kind of towards the end. Didn't look like Q1 was going to get into rain. We might have had it in Q2, and then Q3 looks like we were going to have a downpour, but it never really materialized. It never really showed up. Maybe a couple little drops here or there, but nobody ever had the need to go to wet tires. We didn't have that thing where, you know, everybody goes out, puts in a time with 10 minutes remaining in Q3, and then it rains and nobody else goes out. So never quite materialized, but, some cloudy skies overhead, a lot of action on track, and we were not disappointed. We had track records shattered throughout the course of qualifying, which was good stuff, man. We were talking about, hey, we want these cars to be faster. The 4 to 5 seconds didn't quite materialize, but we did shatter some Michael Schumacher times, which were the all-time fastest times in Formula One. And
I couldn't imagine if those cars were 4 to 5 seconds faster.
I know.
I couldn't imagine it.
Right now, they're about one to one and a half seconds faster over the course of. And when I say that, I'm not talking about last year. I'm talking about from the fastest they've ever been, the V10 era.
You know, it'll be interesting to see when we get to some place like Silverstone where cornering speeds are really, really high.
I can't wait to see these cars go through Eau Rouge,
and,
man.
No, I mean,
130R. I want to see the 130R so bad.
Oh, Maggots Becketts? Come on.
That's going to be great.
That's going to be spectacular.
Yeah.
And just, you know, a place like Silverstone will really highlight the difference, you know, between last year's car and this year's car.
Yeah.
So we may get to that 3 second level.
It's not going to be at Australia, though.
Yeah, but it wasn't going to be this weekend.
All right. Well, let's talk about qualifying. Not a huge surprise, except that the terrible McLaren Honda, or at least one of them, made it out of Q3. Knocked out in Q3 was Joelen Palmer. He had kind of issues all weekend. Lance Stroll as well. Issues up in, you know, kind of every session he had an issue, it seemed like. Stoffel Vandoorne not making it out. Kevin Magnussen and Antonio Giovinazzi not making it out of Q1. Q2, again, no big surprises there. Fernando Alonso made it in, but he didn't make it out. Ericsson qualified in 15th. Esteban Ocon in 14th. Alonso in 13th. Hülkenberg in 12th. And Sergio Perez up there in 11th. I was a little, we'll call it not disappointed, but just surprised at how many, you know, of these teammates you saw with some significant gaps. Stoffel Vandoorne, I thought coming into the season, was going to be not the equal of two-time world champion Fernando Alonso, but I thought he was going to be nipping at his heels the whole time. You know, difference of 13th and 18th in qualifying.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's something that's going to have to come with time. The car being what it is, you know, we'll see. I think Fernando has a higher level of experience with cars, you know, with this capabilities. And, you know, Van Dorn's probably just being a little cautious at this point. He doesn't want to become Lance Stroll.
Tell you, no, I don't blame him. I tell you who I was really disappointed with, though, was Kevin Magnussen. Because I have high hopes for Kevin Magnussen. I like Kevin Magnussen, driving for, you know, the U.S. Formula One team Haas. Qualifying back there on 17th. Meanwhile, his teammate made it into Q3.
Yeah, there's no explanation for that.
Yeah, there's no explanation. Not only is there not an explanation, there's not an excuse for that either.
Yeah, well, I mean, the explanation wouldn't satisfy.
No. So. No, absolutely not. So, issues there. So, let's go on to Q3. Here's what we had. Basically, all throughout the weekend, Mercedes had been fastest. And I'm thinking, not again, right? We're going to have another Mercedes front row. It's going to be, you know, Bottas up there and Lewis Hamilton's going to be on the pole. Not to be. This was good stuff. We had a qualifying that went down right to the end of the end of the session. And when it was all said and done, we didn't have an all-Mercedes front row. We did have a Mercedes on the pole with Lewis Hamilton out there setting a 122.1. The time is just incredible. Getting down the 122s. Low 122s.
Yeah, I think it's over a second faster than the fastest lap ever turned there.
Yeah. Right behind him, however, not the Mercedes, but the Ferrari driven by Sebastian Vettel. They were excited. Good stuff seeing them up there. And, about 2.5 tenths off, but still right up there, right behind them, followed by Bottas, followed by Raikkonen. Then you had Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. Then you had Roman Grosjean in the Haas. Qualifying up in sixth position, out-qualifying his teammate by 11 places. Inexcusable, Kevin Magnussen. Then you've got Felipe Massa in the Williams, out-qualifying his teammate by 12 spaces, Lance Stroll. Carlos Sainz, don't call him Junior, Danny Cafiat right behind him, which, by the way, that car looks great, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's
the Toro Rosso.
I'm glad to see that they really went a different direction with the livery.
Yeah.
Just because, it used to be the yellow nose versus the gold nose, and pretty much everything else was the same. Not anymore. It's a good-looking livery.
It looks really good. Then you had Danny Ricciardo in his home race looking for a great performance. Crashed out.
Yeah. Very unfortunate for him. I mean, yeah. He's obviously well-regarded. The fans were loving him. Tons of support there. And that goes back to my earlier comments about these being driver's cars. Julian Palmer went out after he crashed coming onto the front straightaway. Car got away from him just a little, little bit loose, and he lost it. And these cars are going so fast, the drivers have so much less time to react because the cornering speeds are that much higher. And the same exact thing happened three corners prior to Ricciardo later in qualifying.
Yeah, we had a couple of these throughout the weekend. And here's one of the things that adds to that, too. When you have a more aero-dependent car, like these cars are, yes, the tires are a lot bigger, but your wings are bigger, your diffusers, your rear diffusers are bigger as well. So you have this aero-dependency. Aerodynamics work great when you're moving straight.
In the direction intended.
Yes, when you're going in, when you have traction and everything, but the difference is when you start losing mechanical grip, the tire starts to slide a little bit. It starts to, squeal a little bit, and, it just starts to kind of, you get that yaw that, kind of the back end steps out where you can kind of hold it there. You can kind of, hold it there a little bit and it won't get away from you. The difference is when you have all this aerodynamic forces coming onto the car, once you get that yaw effect, those wings and all that stuff that's producing all that downforce, all the tunnels and diffusers and everything, all of a sudden they say, wait a minute, the air's not coming in the front anymore. It's coming in the side. And when it starts coming in the side, it says, we don't like working like this. We're just going to stop working. So you lose. It's not like a tire where it's kind of this linear effect where you have grip, 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 a little less, a little less, a little less. You go, I've got downforce, more downforce. The faster you go, the more downforce you get. More downforce, more downforce, more downforce, no downforce.
Yeah, and when you exceed the grip of the tires and you reduce the effectiveness of the aero, it's almost like flipping a light switch.
Yeah.
You go from, really on the ragged edge, but then the ragged edge is it's really definite. And when you step over that, you got to be a very good driver to get it back.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's almost impossible. And this is something, the cars are different this year. They're not used to these handling characteristics. I think we'll see less of it as the season goes on.
Sure.
As everybody learns those limits a little bit better. But it's still, driving a race car is hard. It ain't easy.
Yeah.
It ain't easy.
Makes you respect what they do.
Well, let's go to the race that was. And we go to today, no threat of rain in Melbourne. Everybody kind of said from the get-go it's going to be a one-stop race. And, we've got a bunch of cars out there that aren't, worried about, who's on the soft, who's on the ultra-soft, maybe a little bit here and there, but pretty much everybody seemed like was on the ultra-soft tires. They were able to make some pretty decently long runs on them. So it did not look like we were going to have this.
Inexcusable.
What?
inexcusable. They were talking about ultra soft tires, the softest compound, going 20 plus laps.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I like that we're not necessarily quote unquote managing tires anymore. Maybe, I guess, I don't know, but yeah, 20 plus laps on ultra softs, that's too long for an ultra soft.
Sure.
So everybody switched from ultra softs basically to super softs, and then went, I don't know, switched from ultra softs to softs. I guess. And that was the race. So one pit stop for everybody, which was kind of disappointing, but we had some great action up and down the field throughout the race. So we get to the race, we go out there, and Danny Ricciardo in his home race made it into Q3, but wasn't able to record a time because he crashed. Was not able to make it to the grid. His car done broke down on his installation lap. Home race. Hometown guy, everybody wants to cheer on Danny Ricciardo, the Australian at the Australian Grand Prix. He goes out and he's coming around and the car gets stuck in sixth gear. And it's not quite date done because they were able to push him back, get him into the grid, get him not to the grid, but to the pits. He was able to start the race, although he started the race essentially two laps down.
Yeah, and of course, that being my pick to win the event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was...
Your hopes were dashed pretty quickly there.
Yeah.
Well.
So I didn't have to worry about cross-rooting. You know, rooting for the driver I picked versus the guy I really wanted to win.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was not an issue. It was not an issue. Unfortunate, though, just he has never had a whole lot of luck there.
Yeah, and well.
He's had bad luck.
In his defense, neither have any of the Australians. They haven't had an Australian winter there in decades.
Yeah, I think Mark Webber's best finish there was like fourth or something.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever won.
And you know, that's just some of the bugs you're going to find out. You know, now his was exacerbated because they had to do a last-minute
suspension
gearbox
change
after his crash. So he didn't have a chance, you know, to run that transmission, you know, in earnest. So they were really going out with... I mean, I don't know if it was an unknown, you know, I'm sure it had been driven before, but it was, you know, hastily changed and they didn't have a chance to do any installation laps.
Well, we get to the start and then we decide, hey, let's not start this time. Let's go around one more time and do it again.
And did they ever explain why?
No, I think it was an issue. Maybe, I don't know if it was an issue with one of the Renaults, maybe. I think whether it was, I don't know if it was Hülkenberg or who, but I think they pulled too far forward or something like that. So they went back, redid it. Everybody went around again. They came back to the start, and we got ready to do it all over again. And we get to the start. The, you know, lights come on. Everybody's ready to go. The lights go off. Lewis Hamilton gets a great start. Behind him, right behind him, his teammate, Valtteri Bottas, also gets a good start. And Vettel gets a decent start, although not good enough to overtake Lewis Hamilton going into turn one.
Yeah, I mean, and Bottas got up alongside of him, but because of the right-hand corner at the end of the straightaway, was never really going to make it work.
You had Roman Grosjean getting a very good start. You had lots of people moving on back in the field. However, not getting a good start, Haas Formula One driver Kevin Magnussen came together with Marcus Ericsson, and he was able to get his car. Magnussen was able to get his car out of the sand trap that he forced both cars into. But
yeah, they both were able to continue, which is actually kind of surprising because that's normally the end of somebody's day, especially when you come to rest in one of them, and they were both sitting still. So apparently the design is such that, you know, they were packed enough that they were able to roll out.
Yeah, which was nice to see him continue, but Magnussen's weekend just kind of kept going from bad to worse for him.
Well, let's be polite and say he's going to have to do better.
Yeah. He does. And I like Kevin Magnussen.
I want to see him be successful. I want to see him contribute to the team.
But I think this is one of those weekends for him and one more driver, Lance Stroll, who was on his first weekend here.
Debut.
Yeah. Where I think they just say, you know, what is it? You never get a second chance to make a first impression. Well, your first impression has not been a good one, guys. Well, let's just move on and let's just get better. Let's just get better.
Well, he does have his own website.
Yeah. Has he crashed today? There's also another one too, by the way. Has McLaren broken down today?
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that freighter made it over there with all the containers.
Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of stuff going on in the world of Honda and McLaren. Looks like that could be broken up here in the, you know, coming months and whatever. And who knows what's going on with that saga, but it is it's a saga over there.
It is indeed.
Yeah. We won't get into that. Let's keep going on the race. You had Lewis Hamilton now in the lead, followed by Sebastian Vettel, followed by his teammate Valtteri Bottas, and then followed by Mr. Max Verstappen. You had Lewis Hamilton start checking out from kind of the rest of the field a little bit, but right behind him was Sebastian Vettel. Vettel was on his gearbox the entire time, but they started to pull a little gap there on Bottas, and Bottas started to pull a little gap on Verstappen as well. Raikkonen. And then Verstappen back behind him. Yeah. So you had that little gap in between Vettel to Bottas, and then another little gap between Bottas to Raikkonen. And then, however, what you had was nose-to-tail racing on that first stint in between the Mercedes and the Ferrari.
Yeah, I mean, it was good stuff. I don't know if it was strategic or not. Lewis had gotten himself about a second and a half lead, you know, got himself out of DRS zone. And I don't know if that was by design on his part or if it was by design on Vettel's part to just ride out the first stint and keep the car in fairly clean air, because obviously the closer you get to Lewis, you know, the more disturbed air you're going to be running in. But either way, that, you know, they just kind of settled into a pace, and they were still quick enough to, as you said, you know, to kind of dispense with everybody behind them.
Well, when you have that, you have that kind of nose to tail action, I'm thinking, all right, he's going to start checking out now. He's going to start just pulling away from him. We'll see that Mercedes, you know, prowess show up. And it didn't. That Ferrari stayed right with him the entire time.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so, well, it makes it exciting for the fans, obviously. And and that's why I can't figure out, you know, who was controlling that. Was Fernando or was Lewis controlling the pace, you know, and just keeping a gap? Or was Vettel just kind of play coy and stay back, you know, in cleaner air and see what happens on the first or and only stop?
In years past, in years past, it used to be, okay, who's going to pit last kind of thing. And then it became in the, you know, previous couple of years, it was kind of who's going to pit first and who's going to undercut the pit. You know, if you come in, then you can get that advantage getting out onto some fresher rubber and everything. Looks like we may be kind of be going back to the old school now, because you had Lewis Hamilton, I think, on lap 18 on the Ultra Softs come in to the pits. Then you had Sebastian Vettel do something that we used to see, you know, a Ferrari driver do all the time. Michael Schumacher used to just put in some blazing fast laps. And that's what we saw Sebastian Vettel do. We saw him put in some really, really quick laps. And then you had Lewis Hamilton coming out of the pits, with the issue, however, being that he was now out behind Mr. Max Verstappen. You had Lewis on fresh tires, Max on older tires, and Lewis couldn't get by him.
Yeah, and he didn't come out right behind him. He had to run him down.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, where it took a strategic turn.
Yes,
because Mercedes apparently didn't account for that, or maybe they just assumed that, you know, being on fresh rubber, he'd be able to dispatch, you know, Max, you know, handily. Well, it didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen, because he spent a lap and a half or so right on the gearbox of Max Verstappen, not being able to get by, at which point you have Sebastian Vettel up front turning in some fast laps. He comes into the pits. A very fast pit stop by Ferrari. They get him back out, and he comes out just in front of Max Verstappen, and thus just in front of Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, and Lewis had called on the radio when they had called him on the radio and said, Lewis, it's critical to strategy that you get around Max. And his comment was, I don't know how you expect me to do that.
Just can't do it. Just can't get it done.
So that kind of indicates, you know, the, not only his level of frustration, but, you know, the fact that they really, he knew at that point that they missed on the strategy.
Yeah, he did. Well, he did, and they did, because you had now Sebastian Vettel in the lead with Lewis Hamilton behind Max Verstappen. Now, Max Verstappen obviously had to come in and pit. He did come in and pit.
Yeah, that but it was another two or three laps.
Yeah.
And by that point in time, Vettel was out by 6 seconds.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Lewis is trying to get by so much. I guess he might have burned the tires off a little bit there in the early going, because you heard him, on the radio, just, you know, guys, these tires are done.
Yeah, and he was only like five laps in.
Yeah.
So he wore the goodie out of him. And, you know, at that point, you don't know. I mean, he's on the soft compound. He's got 30-plus laps to do. You know, how long did he wear him out so badly that he's not going to make it to the end? You know, Bottas comes in a lap later and pits, and he's on fresh rubber, but he's not battling. He's in cleaner air. So you wonder, is this the time for Valtteri to step up and go and give his teammate a challenge? It was a lot to play for.
Yeah, it was. Here's what I thought might have been happening, just a little bit. This is complete conjecture on my part. Do you think Lewis Hamilton was doing a little saving a face, maybe, complaining about the tires on the radio? I mean, everybody knows that the radio and everything is public. You know, it all goes out over the airwaves around the world. Everybody listens to it, same as us. Think maybe he's trying to do a little saving face there. You can't catch up. These tires are done.
Gamesmanship.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, anything is possible. Anything's possible.
I will say this.
He knew at that point that he didn't have anything to be able to fight Ferrari, yeah. I mean, could he have done it? He's a crafty guy.
Yeah, I will say this. If anybody in the grid, and I love Lewis Hamilton. I think he's my favorite driver. Love Lewis Hamilton. But if anybody's capable of doing that, I'd say it was Lewis Hamilton.
Sure.
More than any other driver.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to ask me, is there one guy in the paddock that would put a comment out there like that for a strategic reason? Yeah, he'd be the guy.
He'd be the one. So I don't know. But anyway, what we had up front then was a Ferrari in the lead, much like they did for the Australian Grand Prix last year. However, this time, Ferrari made the right decision. It seemed like last year, every time Ferrari made a decision, it was the wrong one. In Australia last year, they didn't change tires when everybody else changed tires, when we had a safety car. This time, their strategy was spot on. And that's a big, big difference, because it seemed like last year, Ferrari was just in a funk. They couldn't get out of their own way because they kept making the wrong decision every time. And this time, and it seemed like Mercedes made the right decision every time. And you can say, well, it's Monday morning quarterback and everything. Well, when you look at it, Ferrari made the right decision to pit Vettel when they did. Mercedes made the wrong decision to pit Lewis Hamilton when they did.
Yeah, but here's the other thing. It didn't look like it. It looked like, you know, Lewis had gotten all he could get out of those. Now, you remember, those were used ultra soft tires,
right,
that he qualified on.
Right.
And because he did his quick lap in Q2 on those used ultra softs, and he did not better that on a set of new ones because he never got back out, he was forced to start on those tires. So to me, that was their Mercedes' first strategic error, was they didn't get him back out to do a better lap on a set of new ones so that they could start the race on those. They were forced to use. Maybe that was by design. They were going to be scuffs or whatever you want to call them, and they thought they'd get better life out of them. But nevertheless, that was where I think, you know, their weekend started to come apart.
And you know, their weekend didn't completely come apart. They still had a great performance, but very un-Mercedes-like with this. Very un-Mercedes-like. You're listening to WPRK Winter Park, Florida, recapping the 2017 Australian Grand Prix. From there, we have Sebastian Vettel now in the lead, Lewis Hamilton in second. But you have that 6-7 second gap, and I'm thinking, okay, Lewis is going to close this one down. No.
In the past, he would have.
Yeah.
and he would have put in some flyers, and you would have seen him just tear it up and close it down. And instead, what you had was his nightmare scenario. You had Valtteri Bottas closing in on him.
Yeah, you had the gap being closed down, not by Lewis Hamilton, but on Lewis Hamilton. And his teammate coming down behind him, and I'm thinking, all right, Valtteri, this is your chance. You want to talk about gamesmanship. Valtteri, and they talked about this during the broadcast, this is your chance to get on the radio and say, guys, I'm right behind him. What do you want me to do here? What do you want me to do? You want me to make a move? You want to order him out of the way so I can go on and try and catch Vettel? What do you want me to do? That's his chance.
That would have been great if he had gotten there.
He was never quite there.
Yeah, I don't think he was ever quite there, and certainly not in a fashion that would allow, you know, the paddock, you know, to be able to call over and give him an order.
If I'm Valtteri Bottas, this is your chance. This is your best chance. You have a 1-year contract. If they, quite honestly, Valtteri, if they thought much highly of you, if they thought that highly of you and they wanted you around a long time, they'd given you 2 or 3 years. They didn't. They gave you 1 year. This could be your best chance to win the world championship. Every opportunity you get to pass your teammate and take it to your teammate, I'd take it. Now,
and we don't know if he couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, if there wasn't enough left in the car to be able to mount a fight, then, you know, you do what you can to get it to the end. But I'm kind of with you. If he thought there was even a chance to be able to get up to Lewis and maybe pass him, because at that point in time, the race win is gone.
Yeah. Well,
unless, you know, Ferrari has an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, again, you're a racer and you have a teammate and you always want to be your teammate. That's rule number one.
Mm-hmm. Beat your teammate. Don't crash him. But rule number two, I guess, is beat him. Well, back in the field when all this is going on, we've got people kind of falling out all over the place. Power unit issue for Roman Grosjean, who's having a great run, great qualifying position for the Haas team, having a good run going on, looking like, hey, if there's an issue up front, this could be one of those podium finishes. However, fairly early on, a power unit failure for Roman Grosjean. Joelan Palmer lost some brakes, had a problem with his Renault. Ericsson was out later in the race after he came together with Kevin Magnussen. The other Haas getting knocked out as well. So Haas having a pretty bad outcome for the weekend with a lot of promise in qualifying, but both cars unable to finish the race.
Yeah, and that's typical Melbourne.
Yeah, first race of the year. McLaren Honda, Fernando Alonso not making it to the end, have a, you know, broken suspension issue with him, and Danny Ricciardo as well not making it to the end of the race, had an issue, and
it sounded horrible.
Yeah,
really bad.
Yeah, not good. They said it's a fuel cell issue, whatever that means.
Oh well, he ground to a halt, you know, off the track, of course, but it sounded like it was trying to lock up, and it really ugly mechanical noises.
Yeah, bad news. Well, what we did have was a good race up front and then a good race mid-pack. We had some action kind of going on throughout the field of all kinds of stuff that, you know, Fernando was in there dicing, and then I just got touched a little bit, and then his car just kind of fell into pieces. Meanwhile, you had somebody stepping up in a big way. Antonio Giovinazzi and that Sauber finishing the race in his first opportunity and beating somebody too, quite frankly, which is big. Now he beat Stoffel Van Dorn, but I think that's a good showing for him.
Oh, if I'm putting him in the car, that's exactly what I want him to do.
Yeah.
Just bring it home.
And if I'm Pascal Wehrlein, I'm saying I need to be back in racing in China. I don't want this guy getting any more seat time out there, and quite frankly, finishing the race when my other teammate is not.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't set the world on fire. I mean, I think the guy you got to really tip your hat to is Esteban Ocon.
Yeah, he did great. Finished in the points.
And he was racy.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, he had a battle with Fernando, and he had a battle with Hülkenberg late, and he came out on top.
Yeah. And that Force India, that super pink Force India. Well, he finished out the points paying position, but let's run down as they finished the Australian Grand Prix, winning in the first race of 2017. The German Ferrari driver, Sebastian Vettel, after that move for Ferrari, Mercedes had nothing for him. Then you move down to the Mercedes of Lewis Hamilton in second, followed by his teammate Valtteri Bottas. Kimi Raikkonen, the other Ferrari driver, finished in fourth. Max Verstappen, the Red Bull driver, finished in fifth. I love Max came on and said, hey, what's the fastest lap of the day? I think I'm going to go for fastest lap with like two laps left. And the engineer comes on immediately and says, it's too fast. Too fast. Forget it.
I don't know why you would even, ask a question like that. However.
Because he's how old? 19 years old?
Yeah, when did that happen?
What, did he turn 19?
I thought last year he was like 12.
Yeah, no, I guess he's 19 now.
19?
Yeah.
Max is growing up.
Yeah, he's growing up before very high.
Not in all ways.
Yeah. Well.
too fast, Max.
Yeah, too fast, Max. Leave it alone.
But in the end, I think actually Raikkonen pipped the fast lap of the race.
He did. He did have the fastest lap. Felipe Massa finished in sixth. Nice for him to be back out of retirement for Williams. Followed by Sergio Perez in Force India, Carlos Sainz in eighth, Danny Kvyat in ninth, Esteban Ocon in tenth. Wonder if Haas is saying, maybe we shouldn't have done that whole let's get rid of him and get in Kevin Magnussen right now.
Gutierrez was not a find. I mean, it was he could have easily had the same weekend that Magnussen had. So
well.
I don't think they have any regrets at this point. I think the upside to Magnussen is better.
Okay.
I think there's a bigger upside to him than what Gutierrez could deliver. And, we don't know the behind the scenes either as to, perhaps how Grosjean and Gutierrez got along. That may have been a factor as well. I never heard any rumblings about it, but you don't know. Chemistry is sometimes a big issue.
Yeah, it is. Hey, and what we've heard in this past week is that, yeah, that whole Rosberg thing. You know how we were always saying, oh, no, it's not an issue. There's no infighting in the team. And everybody said, yeah, right, come on. And they kind of came out this week and said, no, it was a problem. It was a problem, the Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton relationship.
Oh, yeah, it was toxic.
It was a problem. Yeah, we basically just, lied
the entire time. Well, nobody ever believed him that it wasn't an issue. I mean, these guys were carrying on over the internet, at the racetrack, on the racetrack, after the race. I mean, there's no way that stuff doesn't bleed over.
No, it does. Well, we had a great race. We had not a Mercedes on the top step of the podium, but some exciting stuff. I will say this. We did not have a whole lot of on-track passing, and I don't know what will happen with that as the season goes on.
Well, I mean, hopefully as the upgrades come and as these guys get a better handle on the car, that the racing gaps will get a little smaller.
Yeah.
Because they were fairly strung out. Vettel lapped up to seventh. I mean, there were only six cars on the lead lap when he was done. So you don't want to see that every race.
No.
You want to see battles and you want to see them on the lead lap where they have a chance to affect the outcome.
Yeah. I tell you what, I am so glad that Formula One's back and happy that we have a good show. I'm happy that I think the best news this weekend, besides that the cars are awesome and all that kind of stuff, the best news coming off the track was what we spent so much time talking about Liberty Media making some changes in the fan experience and all that kind of stuff. We're starting to see some concrete stuff happening by them little by little, but I'm just excited to see that, and I think we're heading in the right direction. So I'm excited about this season and about seasons to come.
Oh, I agree with you. And I think that all points to, some good things down the road, because in addition to Liberty Media taking this proactive posture, this fan-friendly posture, you now have some cars that you can tout as really, really cool.
Yeah.
And you now will get fan interest, I think, not just personality-based, hey, I'm a Lewis fan, hey, I'm a Sebastian fan, or a Max fan, whatever. They're going to come to see the cars again.
Yeah.
Because the capability level of them has been increased so much. And as they continue to get better over the season with upgrades, there's no telling where we're going to be at the end of the year.
By the way, the fiance, very excited that her little German favorite driver.
A German boy?
Her little German boy won. Very big fan of Sebastian Vettel. Very excited.
I think he's actually older than your fiance.
I think she, how is Vettel? How old is Vettel now?
31, 30?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. So they're close to the same age. Well, anyway, Vettel, nonetheless, winning. Exciting to see a Ferrari. Exciting to see somebody besides Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg. We knew it wasn't going to be Nico, but exciting to see Lewis challenged. I think he's going to have to get back on the top of his game pretty quick here, because the Ferrari may not have the pace in qualifying, but you know, it's a couple tenths here or there. We'll see in the coming weeks, the coming races, how that shakes out.
And I think I think this bodes well for qualifying. I think we're going to have some epic battles like we had several years ago.
Mr. Warner, before we head out of here, final thoughts on Australia.
My final thought is that Ferrari did what they needed to do in the offseason, and that is shut up and get the job done.
Yeah,
no more promising that things were going to happen, even when we knew they probably weren't. No happy talk. They just got the job done and showed in the end product.
They did, and they made the right decision. They had not bad luck. They had good luck this time, which I think makes a huge difference, and that's a great way to start off the season. You got to start off on a good foot, and Ferrari has started off on a great foot here for this. We're going to get out of here. We've got China coming up here in a couple weeks' time, though. We'll be back next week to talk about that and preview that, as well as Long Beach for IMSA. So we'll preview all that stuff next week. I want to thank everybody for listening and checking us out this week. Check us out online, themotorsportshour.com, where you can download our podcast. For Chris Wire, my name's Clark Sprinkle. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Until next week, bye-bye. Rip the two, 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 rip the